It's the Mike Tech Show, show number 451. This show is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Please visit techpodcast.com. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the podcast. I'm your host, Mike Smith. Thank you very much for downloading and subscribing to the show. Please visit the main website at miketechshow.com. You can email me questions and suggestions for future show topics. My email address is miketechshow@gmail.com. You can leave me a voicemail message. The phone number is 240-949-2450. And that's Mike Tech Show, all one word on Skype. Follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/Mike Tech Show. On Facebook, send me a friend request, facebook.com/Mike Tech Show. Also, we got the wiki, which has links to all of the past shows, links to the audio, the show notes, and that's mtswiki.com. Got another jam-packed show. I'm going to spend a few minutes talking about a scam that happened to one of my clients. Luckily, he made out okay. I was just not aware of this happening and how easy it is to fall prey to this. So I am going to talk about that and what happened and what we have to do to prevent it. And it's not going to be easy. So wait to hear this. Then I have a stack of email that I want to finish up. A lot of it response to some of the past shows where I was asking for alternatives to Google Reader, just some great utilities and questions and tips. So right now, before we get started, you want your websites to load quicker, and you want to make sure that if your DNS provider goes down, you have a secondary route to your website. That is where dyn.com comes in. That's dyn.com. With outsourced DNS, you can make sure people can get to your websites at all times. With managed DNS, you can even connect items like your webcams or DVR to a private channel that you can pull from at any time. DYN has service tiers for companies of any size. DYN serves more than 4 million customers around the world. Stop taking chances with uptime and start talking to Dyn about best-in-class managed DNS. To get faster internet by using DYN for DNS, visit dyn.com/podcast30. Fill out the contact form or start shopping right away and save 30% by using the promo code podcast30 at checkout. So again, visit dyn.com/podcast30. So a couple weeks ago, I get a call in the morning from a client that I provided a Dell Optiplex for his home office. And he called and described this a really loud buzzing that was coming out of his computer, and the screen went black and the system would shut down. And I said, wow, this really sounded like a hardware problem. And the more I talked to him for a couple minutes, I said, we got a hardware problem going on here. The computer's less than a year old. You have a 3-year pro support from Dell warranty, so they'll come out and they'll fix this. I said, give Dell a call, call their 800 number, and take the tag number that you have from on the machine and give them that tag number. They may ask for the express code, have that number available, and just call them, follow their instructions, and get back to me and let me know how you're making out. So I now go to my next client. I'm helping them in the morning, and I get a phone call from this client who called Dell and said, I'm on the phone. they want $250 to repair the system. They say I'm infected with some kind of an infection. And he says, Mike, when they logged into my system, they brought up a whole bunch of errors they're showing me from, he says, I think it's the event viewer. I said, hang up with them and shut off the system. I'm coming over as soon as I wrap up here with my client. I am coming over there. You're not talking to Dell. I just knew it by the way he was describing it. There's no way Dell would do that and then start to hold his system hostage for $250. Well, he thought he was calling Dell. He has an iPhone. He typed in Safari on the iPhone, Dell support. And he showed me when I got there, the first five results. This was 2 weeks ago. The first five results on the iPhone were not Dell. And the one he called at the top looked like Dell. It said Dell-support. But once you looked at the domain, it was .dot and it had some horrible name .com. It clearly was not Dell. And they had an 800 number for support for your Dell servers. And if you're looking at this on an iPhone and you're not clicking the link and you're just seeing the summary and you see that phone number, you think you are calling Dell. They've set up the scam to where they use GoToAssist and they have you connect and they log into your computer. Now, if you open up Event Viewer on any computer, you're going to see errors. It's going to happen. So they bring up Event Viewer and they show him all these errors and, wow, this is the problem. We're going to fix your computer. And, oh, by the way, you know, we need your credit card. You know, would you like to pay that via Visa or MasterCard? It's at $250. This is horrible. Now, if you were to Google that, and I've done that, you do get the bad results. But if you're actually looking at Web of Trust, it'll actually block some of these. Now, on your iPhone, you see how easy it is. And that's why I wanted to let everybody know that there's this out there. Now, Kate brought up, and she had a great voicemail and an article way back on the fake Microsoft technician scam where they would call you. Where here, they're just putting bad posts up and getting a good high Google ranking with a scam on Dell support. And I assume it's happening with HP if you were to, I guess, anybody type. The way they're handling this and making it like pretending they're Dell, that if you call them, this is horrible. And you could see how easy it is for someone unsuspecting to get caught up in this. Hold on a second. So how do we arm our clients and our people to let them know? The best way is any time, and now I'm starting to do this, put the Dell 800 number on the Dell box. Use a Brother P-Touch or something. Make sure that your client has the phone number for the main support for anything you're providing. And that's the only way I can think of a way around this. You have to educate them to, even if you don't have it, to type Dell.com. And go to the website directly to find the support number. You can't just type it in a search bar. So, and let's say if I was to ask 50 people to go to Dell.com, 49 of them will be searching it because they have no idea where the address bar is, if it's even viewable. I guarantee you 49, I know because they're all my clients, 49 out of 50 people will do a search on a website and not type the website. So that's why it's critical to have an add-in like Woot. So you have a fighting chance of at least blocking the bad websites. So we have to educate everybody that you have to type the site that you want to go to. You want to find Sony? You got to go to Sony.com. And you must put that in the address bar, not the search bar. And most people do not know the difference. Now, you do if you're listening here to the Mike Tech Show. But your typical user does not know that. Arm your users. Arm everybody with Malwarebytes Pro. That's another thing that can stop some of these. But, you know, a website that's not doing anything bad, but yet is advertising a phone number that's bad, it's not going to show up in anything as bad. So this is the problem where, you know, someone is just being scammed by, you know, typing in a search and seeing a phone number and then calling that phone number and they think they're talking to Dell. Or do you think they're talking to HP? So if this is happening with Dell, it's got to be happening with other companies. And it's a shame. And I know I spent a lot of time here talking about it, but I want to get the message out, get the word out to cut down on this. Now, for me, what I would do is for this client, ran Combo Fix, and it was an infection on his system. There was not a hardware problem. So based on what he was communicating to me, well, what happened is the way he was describing it, it really wasn't a hardware problem, but he was using terms of black screen and shutting down. It wasn't shutting down. The whole screen wasn't changing the way he was describing it. So just the user, the way he was describing the problem to me made me think it was a hardware. It was not a hardware problem at all. And once I cleaned up his system, put him on the right path with everything, he's no longer infected. And I'm so glad that he stopped the minute that they were asking for money. And that was on his landline. And he said, hold on. And he put that down and called me on his cell phone. And I'm so glad he did. So I was able to cut it off. All right, so with that, let's get to some email here. All right, this first email is from Patrick Boyle, and it's about Microsoft's check SUR to fix Windows Update issues. Hi, Mike. Thanks for the show. I get something out of every show. My workstation's Action Center flag in the system tray reported that Windows Updates was failing with error 800B001. I looked it up, and Microsoft directed me to a huge 1/3 of a gig utility to possibly fix it called Check SUR. So it's a system update readiness tool, and he has the link. This may be useful after virus cleanups when Windows Update no longer works. The Check SUR repair on mine took over half an hour on a fast 64-bit machine. Wow. And he has the error here and everything that it did for the readiness tool. Now, interesting, here's what I do, and you know I've talked about this so many times. When you know you have an infection and the infection's done, you got it cleaned up, I run the tweaking.com Windows all-in-one repair tool, and in there, it fixes the Windows update. As a matter of fact, I've used just that fix to fix Windows update when it's broken, and it does work. So that tool is, I don't think it takes a half hour, and it's fast. Now, this is great if you know it's just the Windows update, then you can just run this utility, and I'll have the link in the show notes. But remember, the Windows all-in-one repair tool fixes like 36 other things. And when I know there's an infection, I let it fix everything because you don't know what else is broken and you don't want to have to keep visiting and repairing something. And give you an example, my system that I'm working on right now, a laptop right behind me, I could not get a backup to work. And this is after I've done some fixes. And I ran the tweaking.com all-in-one repair tool, and now I'm getting a backup. And it worked. Matter of fact, it just finished right before I started the show. So that's a great utility, and I'll have that link again in the show notes. But I'll tell you, I linked that in another link that I think is important. And if you go to micnation.net/software, you'll find my favorite tools and links. Now, I got to go back and check all that, make sure all the links are good. It's been a while since I double-checked it. But I have my favorite malware utilities, my favorite antivirus, and these repair tools that I always talk about. So I have links there. And for me, that's a site that I like to go to myself when I'm at a customer site and maybe I don't have the latest version or something. I want to go to the site. I'll just go to my software site there, click, and it takes me to the link, and I download the utility. This is from Will. Hi, Mike. I love the show. Keep up the great work. I have a strange situation I am trying to solve. I'll say up front that AOL software is involved. The client is elderly. Boy, common theme on that. And refuses to leave AOL, period. They like it and don't want to learn anything new. The client is running Windows 7 SP1 Home Premium 64-bit. They access the internet via AOL Desktop 9.7. That sounds just like my client. The issue is every time AOL Desktop is launched, it immediately wants to download and install Adobe Flash Player. Once installed, things will work normally until the computer is shut down. When rebooted, the exact same scenario happens again. Flash Player in the AOL software is the same as IE. I have completely removed Flash Player using Revo, ran Galari utilities to ensure no registry traces were left. I contacted AOL tech support, who say it's not their software because the issue is with Flash Player. I then removed the AOL software and then reinstalled a fresh copy, which, by the way, was going to be my recommendation. None of this had made any difference whatsoever. I then removed IE9. And installed Flash Player with only AOL installed. No change. When I install Flash, it works correctly in both AOL 9.7 and IE9. And the icon in uninstall programs is normal. When the computer reboots, Flash doesn't work properly. And the icon in uninstall programs is a blank white icon. My research points to this being an AOL-specific issue. My client refuses to leave AOL and has decided to live with this, hoping I will find a solution at some point. Any ideas on where to go from here? All suggestions are appreciated. Kate, very succinctly in the chat, put, clear the cookies. Clean up the cookies. So I agree with that. So I'm going to go one step further. I want you to go download CCleaner, and I want you to make sure that everything's checked for cleaning all cookies, all history, all everything that it possibly can clean up. Clean it up. Then run the registry cleaner. Clean the registry. Then, just for good measure, and this makes no sense, but I'm going to tell you to run this anyway. I want you to, now she says clear, I don't know, Kate says, I don't know that the CCleaner will clear them in the AOL browser. That's a good point. But clear the cookies in the browser. So I would do all of this, making sure, maybe Google how to clean cookies and cash in AOL software. I know there's an AOL systems maintenance section, and see if there's something in there that you can clean up all the cash and all the cookies. So let's see what happens. And even after all that, I would still run the Windows all-in-one, tweaking.com all-in-one repair tool, and let it clean up all that, because everything that it's repairing, it's not going to hurt anything. But it does sound like there's something wrong with the cookies. Make sure all the temporary files and the internet cache is all cleaned. So make sure you're doing a total reset of IE9. There's got to be data out there for how to clean that in AOL manually, going maybe to the directories and emptying out where the cookies and the cache is stored. Then do a fresh install of Flash, reboot a couple times, and see if the problem goes away. So hopefully that will fix your problem, and let me know if it doesn't. Now, I know when you uninstalled AOL, did you run Revo on install? I think you did. And let's see. Yeah, you did run Revo. So that's what we actually fixed a problem earlier in the pre-show with a listener who couldn't get rid of an extension in Chrome. And he tried everything. He uninstalled Chrome. I said, go download Revo and rip it out. Uninstall it, because it'll uninstall the profile and all of the directories that are truly associated with Chrome. Now reinstall Chrome, and that bad extension is now gone. So that was great. So Revo has come to the rescue on a lot of things, where if you traditionally just delete the, you know, uninstall the program, it leaves behind traces. It doesn't clean itself up properly, and sometimes we gotta really uninstall it with Revo. So we'll hopefully, by cleaning up the cookies and getting to the bottom of this in AOL and IE, is going to fix your problem. This is from Mike. New Gateway 7 system. Hi, Mike. I have a customer that just bought a new Gateway Windows 7 computer with a 1.5 terabyte drive in it. He also bought a Samsung 840 128 gig SSD. The problem is trying to image the 1.5 terabyte data, which equals about 80 gig, to the SSD to make it his new OS drive. I made an image of it onto the SSD using Asus US to do backup, but it put the image in a new folder and subfile. Can't do a clone with my Oroco dual drive toaster, as source drive must be smaller than the target. What is the best way to image an OS from a larger drive to a smaller SSD? Hope that is enough info. I have done same size to same size and smaller to larger, but not this configuration. Now, I believe that there is still a Ghost utility, and that's the old Norton Ghost, and I don't know if it's still around to buy. It probably is. When I bought my SSD drives, they came with that and a cable, so I could image my larger hard drive down to the smaller. I also believe Acronis, with some custom options, allows you to do that, where you could go from a bigger hard drive to a smaller, because it's only imaging what's there. So if you only have 60 gig, even though it's a terabyte hard drive, who cares? It should only take the image for the 60 gig, and then you should be able to put it down. So look at Acronis. Look to see if Norton Ghost is still available to try, and let me know if that works. Anybody else, if you have done this from a larger drive to a smaller drive, what tool are you using? And is there something that is available that's free, that's open source maybe? This is from Peter. Hi, Mike. Yet another print bug. A critical vulnerability discovered in certain LaserJet Pro printers that could give remote attackers access to sensitive data. The affected 12 printer models include the LaserJet Pro P1102W, the P1606DN, the M1212NF. I'm going to find a link to this so you can check out whether you have any of these models. Users are advised to download updated firmware for printers that are impacted by the bug from the HP Support Center site. Peter, thank you. And I'll try to dig up a link that has all of those printers listed, so this way you can follow that and then get the latest firmware. All right, Steve Cherubino has asked me to talk about, and I'm glad to do this because Steve always has great projects and he has a great tech builder site that he's now updated, and it's called Tech Site Builder 2. I loved the first one and supported that, and I am glad to support this one. And you know Steve puts his whole heart and soul into any project that he does, and he does a tremendous job. He is a great teacher. He's great at putting kits together to make it easy for you and to give you really quality work. Like those laptop repair videos were just awesome. His first Tech Site Builder was great. Well, now he's updated Tech Site Builder 2, and he's offering all Mike Tech Show listeners a 40% discount. If you go to TechSiteBuilder.com/MTS, that's Mike Tech Show. So MTS, you're going to get 40% off. And I'm going to have a link in the show notes. Steve, great job, and glad to support his effort for the Tech Site Builder. This is from DJ. Hello, Mike. I'm a longtime listener of your podcast, and because I am in the car so much, I even went back to the beginning to listen to podcasts I missed. It took a while, but well worth it. Thank you for taking the time to broadcast your podcast, you being a wealth of knowledge to those of us who listen. Currently, a client has an SBS 2003 server that we are moving to SBS 2011 because they want to keep Exchange in-house. There are only 15 users and two main applications, Mass90 and a service app that runs on SQL Express. My question is, what is the advantage of migrating versus building up the new server from scratch? Do the applications transfer over? Do all the printer settings come across, or is it just the Active Directory and Exchange mailbox? Unfortunately, when I did the migration from 2003 to 2008 with the help of Winston Wolf, it was only the Active Directory and the mailboxes when we did the migration. And we still had to build all the printers out, especially because now they're going to be 64-bit drivers for 2011 that you're going to be going through. So where 2003 was 32-bit. So right off the bat, you can't transfer to printer drivers. You're going to be getting all new printer drivers. I had the same dilemma that you've had. And let's keep going here, and I'm going to tell you what I did. What benefits do I gain by migrating over a clean install of everything? Do the clean install. Also, how does this affect the workstations one way versus the other? Well, kind of screwed there. I know you use FABS Auto Backup to help with the workstation switchover. Does it make any difference in the process migration versus clean install? No, because you're changing the domain, so you're still going to have to change over the workstations anyway, so you might as well do a clean install. Last thing, when purchasing FABS Auto Backup, should we mention your name in the process? No, with FABS, please use my link in the show notes. So don't just go right to Fabs, but thank you, and definitely mention it, but use my link for the Fabs auto backup, and I always have that in the show notes. So I really got to make a banner on the left-hand side for Fabs for that. So here's what, just to back up a second. Unfortunately, you should be able to do a migration naturally, and everything should migrate the way we would think it would. All the settings, all the workstations, all the user profiles, happy, happy, and it migrates. Well, it doesn't work that way. The migration is a pain in the butt. Start from scratch. This is your chance to build the server out the way it's supposed to. So export all your mail, create the accounts. You can import them back into Exchange. I would, you don't have a lot of accounts. If you had a few hundred, I'd say, yeah, the migration, using the Microsoft migration tools and their steps, do that. But for 15 users, hey, just create the accounts. I had 7 users with this decision, and I had a conference call with Winston quickly saying, what should I do here, clean install or go for the migration? He says, absolutely do the clean install. So for 7 accounts, it was just so much easier to do that. So what I recommend is just pretend it's a new server, create all the accounts from scratch, and do it right from the beginning. And that's the best advice I can give, and I know Winston will concur. This is from Chris. Hey, Mike, regarding the individual who is having problems with his spreadsheet attachments, I would ask the user if he has any macros embedded in the sheets. Some of the more intelligent scanning engines out there may detect macros within the sheet and block the message on that basis. Alternatively, they may have an infection that is injecting malicious code into their spreadsheets. I would recommend creating a blank XLSX file on a known good computer, moving it to one of their computers, and attempt to email it. They're not having a problem emailing it out. It's receiving it coming in, and only from Gmail accounts. So that was kind of strange. Alternatively, they could try contacting Google and see if they can assist with their blocking issues. And then he has LOL. Like, that could happen. Anyhow, love the show. Thanks, Chris. And you can't just call Google and get help. So I think Google's blocking it. I haven't heard back from the listener with that problem, but thank you very much for your email. This is from Adam, Google Reader Replacements. Mike, I've spent most of the last week looking at potential replacements for Google Reader and have found a very limited selection available. This is mostly because the majority of existing web-based feed readers and 99% of the desktop ones use Google Reader as a back end and so will break when it goes offline unless they find a replacement. So far, the viable alternatives I found are Feedly. This is a Chrome, Firefox, Safari extension, and they have a free iOS and Android apps too. It currently uses Google Reader as a back end, but they have their own platform they're in the process of moving to. NetVibes, no iOS or Android client at the moment, but there is a mobile version of the web interface that's passable. Uses its own back end, but the interface is a bit on the slow side. The Old Reader, basically a clone of Google Reader pre-Google Plus, and so very easy to transition to, but they don't have a mobile app yet, and it's struggling under the load from all the reader refugees at the moment. Tiny, tiny RSS. This is a bit more complicated, and it's a web-based feed reader that you have to host yourself on your own web server. That said, it's pretty nice and has mobile versions available, but I imagine most people won't be in a position to implement it. Right now, I'm leaning towards Feedly, despite a few issues I have with the Android app's display options, but I'm eager to see how the Old Reader moves forward, as it seems very promising. I suspect that most of the desktop and mobile applications that currently use Google Reader as a back end will be looking to something like Feedly or NetVibes to provide a replacement rather than roll their own. But we'll have to wait and see. Thanks, Adam from the UK. We need more recommendations and more reviews for Google alternatives. So get them in so we can pass that on to everybody. So want your feedback because Google Reader's going away. What's the best replacement out there for Windows, Mac, Android, and iOS? Adam, thank you so much for taking the time and the reviews. Really appreciate it. All the links to all the options that Adam suggested be in the show notes. This is from Mike. Found a good calendar app. This could be used on either or both of your shows. Trying it out right now and have one set up for family and one set up for business. So far, it looks pretty cool. Here is a summary of the app, and you can log on with the computer also. The number one family calendar, Cozy, is a free app and website that helps you manage your busy family calendar. Plus, it keeps track of everything from school schedules to sports activities, meals, grocery lists, and chores all in one place. Accessible anywhere. Stay on top of family life from anywhere. Access your Cozy account from any computer. And the mobile app is available on the phone, iPad, iPod Touch, and on Android devices. So I will have a link to this app for calendars. Thank you very much. Last email from Todd, client storage. First off, let me take the time to thank you for all the information you provide. I have found your show and Tech Vets to be one of the best podcasts to keep me inspired in my hobby. I have written before and explained that I work on systems for family and friends for fun. I have built up quite the work area over time and proud of my abilities, but listening to your podcast, I know I still have a lot to learn. On to my question. When I back up family and friends' data to my NAS server using FABS Auto Backup, thanks to you, I will keep it data encrypted until I need it. I used to use Crypto NAS for my server, and then the data was always protected. The project has not been updated for some time, so now back up data and my free NAS server, and then encrypt with TrueCrypt until I need to do a restore. I am always afraid if my house was broken into and the computers had been stolen, I would put all these people at risk. When I listen to your show and others, I never hear anybody state that they encrypt the data while it is at rest. What do most professionals do? I have the answer here. I am probably more paranoid than most, as my day job is computer security for a large insurance company. I have attended enough SANS and DEF CONs to become paranoid at every turn. And at my job, most important function is to keep my customers' data safe. Thanks again, Todd. Here's what all of my clients do. 99% of my business clients use Shadow Protect, which has built-in encryption in the backup. We pick a strong password. I use that and encrypt and set it to encrypt all of the backups. So if that backup drive falls into the wrong hands, so what? No one's getting to it because they would need that difficult password to be able to unencrypt the data. That's one way. I use TrueCrypt a lot on external drives for someone that doesn't want to buy Shadow Protect. So what they have to do is mount the drive and then leave it there for encrypting the backup. So the backup files are copied using like SyncBack or some other program, and then that drive's encrypted. So if that drive gets unplugged, someone would have to have TrueCrypt, and they'd have to mount it, and they would need to know the encryption password. So by you using TrueCrypt, that's great. So that's what most businesses do, or they will go one step further and use whole disk encryption. Large financial organization that I manage the IT support for many of their agents, they use Symantec's endpoint encryption utility for whole disk encryption on every single system. So you got companies that go to that extreme, or you got companies that rely on me for advice, and I like the whole disk encryption for TrueCrypt. I have a financial company where we have TrueCrypt and we use the YubiKeys with a 64 character password. There's no way in the world anybody's going to get that. And they just use their thumb on the YubiKey. It enters the 64 characters, and now they can boot into their system. If anybody steals any of those computers or any of those backup drives, they're not getting to anything. So almost every one of my clients, if we have a backup, there is encryption involved. So we may not talk about it all the time, but I think this was a great question. I think you're approaching it the right way. Protect and secure your data. So if it falls in the wrong hands, nobody's going to get your information. It protects your identity, protects all of your financial information, everything. You have to be thinking about this. So that's why strong passwords and encryption, that's the way to go. I want to thank everybody that is using my Amazon link, which is amazon.micnation.net. Thank you so much for your continued use of that link, because your prices remain the same when you go to buy anything from Amazon. But I get a small commission, and it helps support the show. It makes a big difference in helping me and helping me continue to provide the show. It really helps with expenses. And I just can't thank you enough. And thank you for bookmarking that link and sharing it. And that's amazon.micnation.net. Thank you so much. No music tonight. Quick comment. I went to the Pink concert on Sunday night with my wife. That was the most amazing concert. I felt like I was at a circus, a ballet, and a concert at the same time. I've never seen anyone fly around such a large arena so much so often. It's not just one or two songs. Pink's doing this on several songs throughout the entire night. It is just phenomenal. Had a great time. It was an amazing show. Glad I was there. And next concert is going to be Green Day in a couple weeks. So that's it. Thanks for listening. I'll be back next week, same time, same channel. Bye-bye, everybody.
You've been listening to The Mike Tech Show, a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. Please visit techpodcast.com.